Hey everybody, welcome to the Montana Moves and Meals Well Chat. This is episode 11, and we're going to have a whole theme about 11 today. And the way we're going to get into that is kind of random, but also kind of fun. We're gonna share with you, and Kristen's going to go first. We're going to talk about our favorite goofy movies this morning. Just goofy comedies, not the ones that you see on the Academy Awards, but just the ones that make you laugh. And so Kristen's got a list, and I've got a list, and you can think about your list, because it's kind of fun to think about like your favorite goofy movies. The more I started thinking about it, just the harder it became, and the more and more I came up with. So Kristen, you're going to go first. You're going to kick off the Well Chat with your favorite goofy movies.
Hello, everyone. So yes, these movies are the ones that I turn to when I just don't really want to think very hard, and I just want to be entertained and to have a good laugh. So, number one, Old School.
And are these in order? Are these ranked?
I think these are ranked. Okay, yeah. All right. So number one is Old School. I'm a big Will Ferrell fan. Number two, Bridesmaids.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. All right, I forgot about that one.
Number three, Napoleon Dynamite. Woohoo! And number four, which I believe used to be on Neil's list, and he said it has since been kicked off, Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, so you have four.
I have four.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good list. We share one, and then Dumb and Dumber would be on my top 10.
All right.
The thing about Dumb and Dumber is, like, I don't know what happened to me. Dumb and Dumber would have been like,
you got older and wiser.
I did. I got older. Dumb and Dumber was always on my list of favorite goofy movies, and then I don't know, like maybe a year or two ago, it was on TV, and I started watching it, and
realized how dumb it was.
Yeah, I was like, this is stupid. But then it's supposed to be stupid.
Yeah.
So, and then I was really disappointed.
Oh.
But maybe, I don't know.
I haven't seen it for a while, so I'm afraid. So, I'm now actually a little afraid to watch it, because what if I have the same reaction?
Yeah. It's okay. So,
what are yours, Neil?
Mine are in no particular order, and I'll start with the one we share. We had one shared. Napoleon Dynamite is on mine. Awesome movie. The Big Lebowski. Fantastic. Never gets old. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which came out when I was probably in like fifth or sixth grade. And it was a different kind of movie, and I loved it. I had to have one. I love Will Ferrell too. And any, I think, list like this would be remiss without at least one Will Ferrell movie. So my Will Ferrell movie that made the list is Talladega Nights.
That is also a good one.
And then finally, I'll do a couple of honorable mentions first. Animal House gets honorable mention, but it didn't quite make the top five, but really, really close. And I feel like I had one more that was maybe honorable mention, but I guess that's it. All right, so Animal House makes honorable mention, and then the other one that did make the top five is This is Spinal Tap. And that one maybe is not as, I don't know, maybe it's not as popular as some of the other ones we mentioned. Have you seen This is Spinal Tap?
No, I have only seen scenes. That I have probably not that, seen like, the movie I've, in the entirety.
Probably like scenes that I've like shown you on YouTube, like, yes. Or I'll make a reference to Spinal Tap, and Kristen will say, I'm not familiar. And so anyway, one of my favorite scenes in Spinal Tap. So if you haven't seen Spinal Tap, and you're at least, if you are over 40 and you haven't seen Spinal Tap, please go see Spinal, or like get it on wherever you can get it, Netflix or wherever. But watch Spinal Tap, especially if you're over like 35 or 40, because you'll love it. And it will make you think of your younger years, probably. But Spinal Tap is...
What if you're under 40?
fine. You can watch it. I'm just saying it has a special, it's an older movie.
Okay.
It's set in the 80s. So it's about an aging British kind of glam metal band that's on the end of their career, and they make this mockumentary. So it's a mockumentary movie. It's just completely ridiculous. But Rob Reiner is actually, like, director Rob Reiner. I think he might have directed, but he's in the movie as the documentary person. So he goes around and he films this aging British rock band. And so one of my favorite scenes is he's with the lead guitar player, Nigel, who is played by Christopher Guest. And Nigel is showing Rob Reiner, whose character's name I believe is Marty, his collection of guitars and guitar amplifiers. And so he takes Marty over to the guitar amplifier, and he says, should I do British?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, okay. So I would do a really poor British accent. So he says, you'll notice that our amplifiers go to 11. Most only go up to 10, but if we're looking for that little extra push over the cliff, we can go one higher. We can turn it up to 11. And so Marty is kind of confused by that, and he says, well, why can't you just have it be 10 and let 10 be the highest number? And Nigel doesn't really know how to respond, and all he can get out is, ours go to 11. So that's it. So ours go to 11. This is Welch Hat episode 11. We did all that.
With that intro.
We did that intro to get here to the thought of going past 10, that little extra something to go to 11. And we're actually going to tie that into today's episode.
So, Neil, did you go to 11 this weekend?
No. I had an event this weekend that I actually wrote about on the blog, so some of you may be familiar with what we'll talk about for a little bit, but I didn't.
Well, okay, so Neil did the King and Queen of the Ridge this weekend, but how many laps did you do?
Okay, so the King and Queen of the Ridge, if you didn't read the blog post, is a competition at Bridger Bowl here outside of Bozeman, and you basically do a boot pack, like ski hike. It's about a 500-foot climb, and then you ski back down to where you started. That's a lap, and you have 5 hours to do as many laps as you can. And so you ask how many laps I did, right?
Yes.
Guess how many laps I did. Fitting with the theme, 11. I did 11 laps.
But intensity-wise, is that
So actually, I did go to 11.
Okay.
I went to 11 laps, but yes. See, I was getting ahead of myself. Intensity-wise, no, I don't think I went to 11. Now, 28-year-old Neil probably would have gone to 11, and there's times where intensity-wise, yeah, maybe I go to 11. But on Saturday, I decided that like 9, I probably went to a 9. And that was okay. I was okay with that. And I did not win the event by a long shot. But there were a lot of, there were a lot of those pesky like 20-something and
young
people up there, and I said there was one person that had a little more salt and pepper hair than I do, and but otherwise it's just a bunch of kids up there hiking the ridge.
I would say for a 5-hour endurance event that getting to a 9 on the exercise intensity scale, it's pretty good. You're trying pretty hard. As you have a background as an endurance athlete, so just a couple quick questions about King and Queen of the Ridge, because as Neil said, he did write a blog post about this, so I'm sure people are wondering, how did this event, this 5-hour event compare to other endurance events that you've done in the past?
That's a good question. It was different in the fact that most of the endurance events that I've participated in, I do a lot of running. I do triathlon, sometimes duathlon, which if you're not familiar with duathlon, it's like a triathlon without the swimming, which is really great for me because swimming would be my weak link in a triathlon. But most of those events are races, and you are going, you are moving the whole time and trying to get from point A to point B as quickly as possible and having to pace yourself. This one was a little different in the fact that, the time was, so in most races I've done, it's a distance. Like I have to get a certain distance. This one was, you have 5 hours to, do do as many laps in this set amount of time. So it was a little different mentality of like how to pace yourself. And one of the reasons why I said, well, I didn't go to 11 on the intensity scale is after about 4 hours, I had enough. Like I could have maybe done a couple more hikes, and the hiking was actually not that it was easy, but it wasn't the thing that kind of made me go, okay, that's enough. It was actually the skiing back down, because my legs were getting so fatigued that I didn't feel like the last couple of laps, I felt like the skiing was getting a little sketchy. And as you probably know, like when you're tired and when you're fatigued, especially doing something like skiing, like that's when people injure themselves, or that's when you fall, or twist your knee or blow out an ACL, and it wasn't worth it for that. So my body said, hey, this is probably, you're probably good after 4 hours of this. And so I shut it down. Also, if I do this, this is the first time I've done this event, so you got to leave myself a little room to grow, right?
Yes.
Like, I don't want to be like too awesome the first time out and then can never. So next year, if I do it again, I will know what I have to do to beat this year's performance. So I left myself a little room to grow. So it was different in the sense that you really had to decide, okay, how much rest do I take between laps? Hydration and nutrition, of course, were important because you have to sustain yourself for a long period of time. And the men and women that were like the top, like that were really just cranking out laps, it was so impressive because they did not stop. They just kept on going the whole time and very consistent. And wasn't quite there, but still fun, still very, very challenging.
So I know that you did some very specific training leading up to this, although maybe not as much just because you had a short time frame in which to prepare for this. But since you're already talking about next year, what will you do differently in terms of preparation?
So if you follow the podcast, if you follow the blog, if you listen to last episode 10, which I hope you did. And if you haven't, go listen to episode 10 because it's awesome. Our friend Lisa Verwise, who is doing this amazing expedition through Yellowstone National Park, which I believe starts this weekend, she recruited me to be on her team. We had a team of five that did this ridge competition. And she recruited me to be on her team about 3 weeks ago. And so I told her after the event, I said, Lisa, if we're doing this again next year, you have to tell me in December, give me a little bit more time to actually prepare for this. So you were asking like what I would do differently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Lisa just has to tell me we're doing it earlier. So I did I tried to do a lot of sport specific training in allotted time. So a lot of stairs, stair mill. I did get out to the resort a couple of times and do a few actual ridge hikes, which is the best thing you can do to train for something that specific is actually do it. But yeah, just walking upstairs.
Good. And then finally, on the blog, you said that your goals for this event were to challenge yourself and have fun. So did you achieve?
I definitely challenged myself. And Kristen actually asked me, which I thought was an interesting question after the event was over. How did you phrase it?
What was the ratio of fun to misery?
Okay. So the fun misery ratio, which I think this has got to be a new thing. You know, like I think Kristen and I did you just make that up?
I did just
okay, make that up. Kristen coined the fun misery ratio. We're going to start using that. My fun to misery ratio was 3 to 7. So a little more misery than fun. But misery loves company. There were 98 other people that were doing this event, and we were all suffering together. And so it was kind of fun in that sense. The weather wasn't, it was, I would say the temperature was just right to where you weren't burning up and you weren't freezing, because either one of those could have really swayed the...
Upped that misery.
Yeah. Could have really upped the misery factor. So I really can't complain. It was just the misery of burning shaky legs and thinking about when is this going to be over? 5 hours is a long time for me. You mentioned that I'm an endurance athlete, but I'm not that kind of endurance athlete. Like I'm a shorter endurance. Like a marathon is as long as one of the longest events I've ever done, and that only takes me 3 hours. Not 5. And I was thinking about it in that context. I was like, man, I can run a marathon in 3 hours. This is like 2 more hours. So that was mentally hard just to think about like going for that long.
Yeah, that's a long time. Well, I'm impressed that you did the event and that you completed 11 laps. So well done.
Thank you. So I wanted to kind of bring that to a discussion for the remainder of our time today about exercise intensity and, you know, when is it okay to, so to speak, go to 11? This is also, February is National Heart Month. So I wanted to talk about it in that context. So I think a lot of times in our society, and we don't do this just with exercise. I think we do it with a lot of things, but we kind of live in an extreme society, and there's a lot of things that we see, especially in media, maybe on TV, where going, you know, having your amplifier go up to 11 is what you, you know, really need to be doing. You know, 10's not good enough anymore. You gotta crank it up, go to 11. And sometimes in exercise, I think people have the mentality that if they're not going to 11, then maybe they're not, like, why even do it? Like, why even bother? Or, oh, I didn't have, like, you know, an hour to exercise today, so I'm just going to do nothing, because why even bother? And I think that's a dangerous mentality. So I will say that, you know, sometimes, occasionally, it's fine to push yourself. And the exercise scientist in me, the science guy in me, is kind of like Marty in the movie Spinal Tap. And, you know, Marty says, well, why can't just 10 be 10? And so the exercise scientist in me is like, okay, we have some limits. We have some genetic limits. We have some physiological limitations. Like, there's a ceiling to our fitness level, and that, like, that would be a 10. Like, if you were in peak shape and gave your peak performance, think about we've got the Olympics coming up in a few days. Think about an Olympian that's trained, you know, for years and now is ready to give this peak performance and is at the height of their fitness and skill set, and they win a gold medal, they just hit that ceiling. They're at a 10. That's the exercise scientist in me. But I was thinking about it, and I was thinking about what would the college athlete Neil say? And the college athlete, like that young, passionate, you know, young 20-something-year-old would say, no, you can go above that. You can like dig down deep and give this amazing performance that's better than a 10. You can do something that you didn't even think was possible, and that would be an 11. So I don't want to keep that kid alive and say, you know what? Sometimes go ahead, go for it. Turn the amp up to 11 and like rock out. That being said, our population that Chris and I work with, statistically, you are, you know, the mean age is somewhere in your 40s or 50s. And so maybe 11s occasionally, but on a regular basis, 6s, 7s, 8s, 9s, those are good too. Occasionally even a 4 or a 5 is good too, because it's what we're doing on consistently on a regular basis. So I would say my training on the scale of 1 to 11 usually lands on any given day somewhere between a 5 and a 9. What about you, Kristen? What would you, and yours is looking maybe a little different these days. Can you compare like that same analogy of like that kind of scale of intensity where you are now, which is fine. Kristen had a baby like 4 months ago, to where, I want you to talk about that, and then talk about was it 2014? You did a half Ironman, which is also a 5-something-hour block of time to me moving, right? That's kind of sad. Yeah. Like, you went, of course, you had a bicycle for part of it, but like, if we were to compare like how far you went in 5 hours versus how far I went on the ridge in like,
I didn't
4 hours.
Nearly the altitude difference there.
And you weren't wearing ski boots or hauling skis.
No, I was not.
But yeah.
Yes. So as Neil said, I did just have a baby 4 months ago. So my exercise has changed a bit. Whereas before I was even pregnant, I would say exercise for me was always 7, 8, 9, somewhere in there. And now definitely have scaled it back a bit as I'm getting back into exercise. So I would say more 4s, 5s, and 6s. The 6s being short sessions where I'm just trying to get my heart rate up in, you know, quickly in a short amount of time.
Have you been to 11?
Since
no,
or
like
ever.
Just when have you been to 11?
That would be when I did a half Ironman. I remember there was a point in that race when my husband was on the sidelines trying to talk to me and cheer me on, and I was at a point where I could not respond. It was like I cannot talk right now. I cannot. I don't have the ability to wave. I'm just trying to get through this.
So you can have the other end of the spectrum too. You know, you have a certain segment of the population that might think, oh, I gotta be cranking it up to 11 all the time. But you can be on the too light end of the spectrum too. When I was right after school, I was doing some volunteer work with a track team, and there was a distance runner on the team that was. He was kind of mediocre for the team, and I would even say that maybe he was underperforming a little bit. And he'd had a frustrating season. And one day after practice, he asked me. He said, Neil, what do you think I need to do to get better? And I said, Tyler, you need to run faster in practice. And he kind of looked at the ground. And he like looked back up and he said, I was afraid you would say that. Like, he knew that he was kind of, you know, he was not going to 9, 10, or 11 in practice. He was, He was keeping it pretty mellow, not really pushing himself in practice, and he knew it. And he just needed somebody to tell him, like, you just need to step it up a notch. You need to step your intensity up a notch. And I'm happy to say that he, like, from that point, he started practicing harder. He started giving more effort, more intensity in practice, and he got better. And he became a really good track athlete, went on to become a really good triathlete. And there came a day where he was kicking my butt, and I thought, and I gave him too good of advice, because now he's better than I am. But you want to have that sweet spot in the middle where, you know, you're giving a good amount of effort, and you have easy days, you have hard days, and it's a blend of intensity. And I think you will also find that when you're doing that, the exercise and the training program becomes a lot more interesting as well. So, going back to February being American Heart Month, I wanted to actually share some statistics, some cool trivia about American Heart Months. So the first American Heart Month took place in February 1964, and it was proclaimed by President Johnson. And also before that, the Congress, by joint resolution on that date, had requested the president to issue annually a proclamation designating February as American Heart Month. I think that was the last time Congress passed a joint resolution. No, I'm just kidding. But yet Congress came together. It was a bipartisan effort to make February American Heart Month. At the time, so in the early 60s, more than half the deaths in the United States were caused by cardiovascular disease. And as we know, it is still the number one killer of Americans. While American Heart Month is federally designated in the United States, it's important to realize that cardiovascular disease knows no borders. Cardiovascular disease, including heart disease and stroke, remains the leading global cause of death, with more than 17.9 million deaths each year. That number, unfortunately, is expected to rise to more than 23.6 million by the year 2030. So we know in America, we hear it all the time, what a big deal that cardiovascular disease is. So it's important to think about the things you're doing for your heart on a daily basis that are going to keep your heart healthy for years to come. And my recommendation as an exercise specialist is be consistent with your exercise. Don't fool yourself into thinking that only a 10 or 11 type effort counts, because all movement, all exercise counts. The fours count, the fives count. Moderate, even light intensity exercise has great benefit for our heart. And our heart there's great benefit for our hearts for doing more intense exercise. So being consistent between kind of a 5 and a 9 on a scale of 1 to 10, and then on those special occasions or on those special events, maybe it is a race you've had on the calendar, maybe you're trying to set a personal best, then go for that 10 or 11. And the consistent training that you've done with the 5s, the 6s, the 7s, the 8s, and the 9s, that's going to help push you to that 10 and 11. But for longevity's sake, you know, if you're trying to go 9, 10, 11 every day, you're at high risk for burnout, even for injury. So I like to keep it consistent and have a nice, healthy blend.
So just a question to clarify, Neil. So let's say that I exercise 4 to 5 days a week. How many of those would you recommend? Like, what's the blend there in terms of intense workouts and maybe some lighter ones?
That's a great question, Kristen. I'm glad you brought that up. Of course, It varies depending on a person's fitness level and goals. You know, somebody that's already in pretty good shape, that has a pretty high fitness level and that's been training for a while, they can spend more time and more exercise minutes at a high intensity in general. So say let's just take your 5 days a week. If I was training, or if I was exercising 5 days a week, I would have at least one of those days where it was a pretty high intensity day, where I was like really, I was pushing myself. Now those workouts or those sessions might be shorter. Maybe it's an interval session. Those are great for higher intensity. They may be shorter than the rest of your sessions. That's okay. It's not those are about like really getting your heart rate up, really challenging yourself, making something difficult, and your body responds quite well to that kind of training when it's given enough rest. So if you had a high intensity day, maybe the next day is a rest day, or maybe the next day is a really light day. So, you know, for cardiovascular exercise, you know, take running, for example, you may have an interval day where the intensity is pretty high, but the volume, like your overall distance, might be lower. Maybe the next day is just a nice, easy long run. But I would say, you know, at least one pretty intense day, at least one pretty light day, and then the rest of the day kind of somewhere in the middle, that moderate to intense exercise. And your body is good at telling you when you're pushing it a little too much. You know, you can ease off the gas a little bit. Track coaches complain all the time, and this is, you know, a lot of track coaches will use heart rate monitors, but constant complaint of track coaches is that their athletes run their intervals or run the times where they need to be running fast, maybe they're not running fast enough, and the times where they're supposed to be, you know, recovering or having like a light day, they're running too fast. And so they're not getting the max benefit of either one of those exercise. So, you know, let your easy days be easy and make your hard days hard. And then, you know, have a lot of days in that where it's just, you know, moderate or moderate to a little bit of intensity. But it's that healthy blend that will get the max benefit for your body, for your cardiovascular system. And also, I think it's the max benefit for your mind too, because it's not just the same thing day in and day out. If you're doing the same thing every day, change it. Change something. Change the intensity, change the volume, change something, and it will make it far more interesting, and I think you'll have better results. All right, that's our show for today. This has been the Well Chat, episode 11, and we hope that that yours go to 11 when appropriate. All right, for the Montana Moves and Meals Well Chat, this is Neil and Kristen saying, be well.